It's the Gaze in the Blue Eye podcast.
Heyo!
Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
We're back.
Wait, what is this? What's happening?
You and I talking to the computer for a while.
Okay.
We're back after a break.
Yes. We spent some time in Bali. It was really restorative. We didn't. We were at our house.
I went back to work at the school building and
I stayed working at my home building.
You stayed at your home office. So I needed to take a little bit of a break from the podcasting, reading between the lines. I couldn't do podcasting during work hours.
Yeah.
Or spend working hours watching Marvel movies. Etc. I had to do real person jobs.
You're like a real person now.
I am a real person with a real job.
I am not a real person with a real job. I just do stuff at home on my computer.
You are a fake person.
And I have a coworker named Scrappy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much my window to the outside world.
That's your human race. Well,
that's Scrappy's my human interaction that I have on a daily basis.
He's the coworker that snores in your office.
Yeah. So my mental health is really good. That being said.
If I could rate my mental health, it would be tops.
Top notch.
Best mental health.
Ever.
Yep.
Yep. Real healthy socially. Just, yeah.
Your mental health is like...
My social emotional health is like, woof, so good.
It's like those people that do Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, like really fit.
Oh my God, so fit.
CrossFit, tire flipping.
Yeah. Yep.
Running those mud races.
Yeah.
Trojan race.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where at the end you have to fight somebody.
Yeah. Well, you know, so I do go into the office once a week, and it's like I thought that this was going to be like the best thing ever to go into the office once a week. And it really is. I mean, it's still good, but like I go into the office and I'm the only person there. So I'm just like in a huge empty university building, and it's just like, oh, cool. Okay.
Hello, no one.
Hello, no one. Here I am in an office. Beep, boop, boop. Just typing away on the computer and no one's around. It feels like post-apocalyptic. And I'm like, hello, yes, I run this university. Mm-hmm. For no one. And I'm just like in a huge, huge building.
You should take over
and I see no one.
You should take over the PA and be like, good morning, students.
Hello, everyone. We don't have a PA. It's not a high school.
You should make one.
I totally will make one. But no, anyway, I mean, what can you do, you know? What can you do?
Do you ever make your own fire drills and stuff?
No. But I do just sort of like, I walk around the halls and I'm like, and then when I do see, every once in a while I'll see the custodial workers and like we have these really... like awkward interactions, and I don't know if it's awkward for them too, but I'm just like, oh hi, like I never see another human here, it's so good to see you, or like something weird like that. And it's just so awkward. I get like excited but then also nervous because I don't know how to like interact with other people anymore. I'm like a social, what's a good word, social
misfit, dysfunctional,
derelict.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm like all a social derelict. And so it's just like, oh, hi, you're a human. I'm a human. Hello. Beep, boop, boop.
Hello, Carl.
Hi. How's the toilet stuff doing today?
Air ducts.
Cleaning toilets?
Air ducts blowing clear?
Doing some vacuuming. Hello. Have a good day.
Yeah,
so it's good.
That's
it's
exciting.
Pretty cool.
Your
How do people do this like ongoing? I guess like if they chose, like if you like chose to be an at-home worker, maybe it's different because you chose it because you like being at home all the time. like your homebody, one would hope, don't like to interact with other humans. I don't know, like those could be reasons, but I have no idea
why. Some people like it.
I hate it.
Well, they hate you.
Well, I hate them.
No, anyway. We can't have hatred on this podcast.
We love everyone.
We love everyone.
Anyway, that's what I've been doing.
My work experience has been interesting.
Yeah, what's up with you?
I go to the school 4 days a week.
Yes.
High school. Uh-huh. And 2 days a week, there are students in the building. Uh-huh. Probably 10 of them.
Okay. Total or just in your class?
Total.
Okay.
So just in my class, there's usually one or two.
Okay. Oh my God.
That come in.
So depressing.
It's very sad.
But excited. Do you feel the same way? Like I feel when I see the custodial, yes. Like, hi, how are you?
I can't stop saying hi to them.
What have you been doing?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're teenagers, so they hate you. And it's horrible. They do not want to talk to you. And they're like, please don't look at me or talk to me. Thanks.
And I end up like kind of shooting myself in the foot because I'm so excited that they're there.
Yeah.
And then I just talk to them constantly. And oh my then God. They probably don't want
they
to
come back.
They
won't come back. They're going to beg their parents and be like, oh my God, my teacher is so annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Help me.
Please.
Help Can't me. Go. They're desperate.
Well, there's only like 8 days left.
Oh!
And
hello, summer break.
Yeah, so.
What are you going to do on your summer break? Go down the shore?
Down the shore.
What are you going to do down the shore?
I don't know what people do down the shore.
We are going down the shore next week.
That's true.
Well, I don't
Does
know.
Does Maryland count as down the shore?
Okay, that's what I was going to say. So I think down the shore is only Jersey. I think, so this is such an interesting conversation. Okay, maybe it's not, but I think it is. So Jersey is down the shore. And then I would say south of Jersey on the East Coast is I'm going to the beach. So like next week, we're going to the beach. We're going to Ocean City, Maryland. It's a beach and a boardwalk. I'm going to the beach. But then if you're on the West Coast, it's I'm going to the coast. Are there other names for beaches?
Oh, shore, I was thinking
coast, beach.
That like, what do people in Philly and Jersey say when they go to somewhere that's not the Jersey Shore? Do they say like,
I'm going to the beach.
I'm going the beach.
No, I'm going the beach. I'm going to the beach, I think.
I'm taking my daughters and I are going the beach.
No, they don't say Where? That. They probably still say I'm going the shore. Down the shore. Going the shore. Down the shore. I don't know.
I'm going the coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has anyone called it the seaside?
And they don't, but they should.
I like that.
Maybe people in New England say they're going to the seaside.
Or like people in Europe, maybe they say that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's interesting. But yeah, we're going down the shore to the beach.
We're going the beach.
Let's just say we're going the beach next week.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be fun. Rain the whole time?
But it'll rain the whole time, and we'll be in a beach house with my family, and someone will die.
There will be death.
There will be a murder if we are in a beach house together for a week and like can't go outside. Someone will die.
I'm just gonna go ahead and call it.
Well, you won't even be there the whole time, so you definitely won't die. But someone will be dead.
Okay, sounds like a good murder mystery.
Yeah, stay tuned for the murder mystery episodes that follow.
Ooh, we could turn this podcast into a murder show.
Yes.
Everyone loves a good true crime murder
There's
podcast.
There's totally not enough murder podcasts already, so we could just make one.
I think we have an idea here. We could make a podcast where people talk about an unsolved murder case.
What? That's such a new idea.
Or we could continue doing a podcast where people talk about books and TV shows and movies.
Oh.
No one's done that.
Oh my God, we have so many novel ideas.
No one's done that with our unique brand of charm and wit, though.
That's true. That's true. Anyway, I'm drinking a Skinny Girl Margarita. Just thought I'd let you know as the food, travel, and wine correspondent.
Oh, yeah, that's you.
Did
you forget about your role?
No, I'm drinking a skinny girl margarita. I think it's interesting. Maybe they would like to know that we've been trying to eat vegan recently. I'm a vegan.
We've been
trying to eat more vegan options.
Exploring plant-based options.
Mm-hmm. But you have to say, I'm a vegan.
You don't have to say that.
I eat a vegan diet.
I eat a vegan diet?
I eat a vegan diet?
Like you're not quite sure?
I eat a vegan diet, except I sometimes eat chicken.
Anyway, that's been interesting.
That's been fun. I've been enjoying it. Let's tell what we've tried.
It's more so just for exploratory purposes.
Yeah, I think it's been super. I mean, we love to eat and try new things, so I think that it's been a culinary adventure. Let's see. So we've tried some interesting vegan cheeses, like cashew milk cheese in both slice form and shred form. I made a completely vegan pizza with cauliflower crust, vegan shred mozzarella cheese, roasted eggplant, and I made my own pesto out of arugula and some like mixed nuts and olive oil. Tried two vegan restaurants so far.
True, yes.
Charlie was a sinner, and then last night we had Bangkok Bowls. Oh my god, they had this cauliflower appetizer that was like peanut butter cauliflower. They were like very lightly breaded, and they came with vegan ranch. Oh man, like probably top appetizers.
Tasty.
So good.
Tasty appy.
What else have we tried vegan stuff?
That parm cheese was pretty good.
Ooh, that parm cheese was
pretty tasty.
Oh yeah. It came in like an actual parm cheese triangle. It was very much you could grate it. It has the same like texture, mouthfeel as parm. It was so good.
Mouthfeel.
Whatever.
That's gross.
I love the mouthfeel on this.
That's been an interesting development.
That has been interesting.
Just trying to cut down on the meat. Yeah. But try different things.
Cut down on the meats.
That ice cream was good.
Oh, damn. We've tried some good vegan ice cream. Real good vegan ice cream.
Real good.
What else?
What was it?
Vegan yogurt we've tried. And yogurt also really good vegan coffee creamers we've been having.
Coconut yogurt was yum.
Coconut yogurt was really good. Vegan ice creams we tried. One was like a strawberry jam crumble. And then the other one was a like salted caramel.
Cashew.
That one was
the best one.
That anything salted caramel for me is like, oof, the best.
Oof.
So good.
Can we, as we're talking about food, can we transition into our first book?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take a look here and see. Yep, we got time.
We got time is on our side.
I got all.
You know what I thought we could
time in the world.
Have you ever considered singing as a career path?
I have.
Okay, good.
Thanks. For noticing.
Whoa, Mr. Iguana.
Yeah, what I will say about the book is like some of the pictures are kind of like, ooh.
I like it.
I know you like it. I'm like, it's not as aesthetically pleasing for me though. Look for in a cookbook.
See, this is the kind of stuff I like, and I've been trying to find online where to buy this person's artwork.
This is a cookbook for a man.
Hey, a man. Cookbook for man.
Let's talk about gender roles.
There's ladies in here.
No, I know. I'm just the fact that I said something's for a man is obnoxious.
Lady.
I know. Great.
You know what I thought? I thought we could call this episode Essential Summer Reads. Because we have a lot of books.
Okay. I love it.
Books of summer.
Books. Boys of summer.
Somehow incorporate boys of
After
summer.
After the books of summer have gone.
Yeah.
I didn't get the tone right there, or like the key.
Don Henley is loving that.
That song's great.
Let's talk about the books of summer. This is the Gaze in the Blue Light podcast official 2021 summer reads list.
Okay.
That sounds very official.
Okay.
Because I have some books to talk about. You have a book to talk about.
Well, I have three books to talk about. I can talk
three.
About.
Three?
You just sprung this on me right now that this is a Books of Summer episode. This was not, we didn't talk about that.
All right, so well, let's get
now
started.
Now I got to go scramble and get more books.
Books of Summer. Wow.
Yep.
This is the first one.
Okay.
And I feel very, very fortunate and thankful that Running Press sent this one to us. They're awesome.
They are.
They're
awesome.
Here in Philadelphia, and they have the coolest books that make the coolest gifts,
mm-hmm.
and or are on your summer essential reads list.
Yep.
This one is called Eat Like a Luchador, the official cookbook from Legends of Lucha Libre and Monica Ochoa.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Yep.
It's really cool. It is coming out, listen to this, officially on June 1st.
Oh, wow. That's like next week.
The timing could not be better. So learn about it here. And then I'll put the link in the show's description, mm-hmm. where you can go get yourself a copy. Because
buy it on Tuesday.
It is an essential book of summer. It's made mm-hmm. our list. It's made our list. And a lot of people want to know what our list is for essential summer reads. And Eat Like a Luchador is on it. It is, let's see how much it's going to be. $25.
That's so
reasonable. That's a really good deal. It's 320 pages.
Mm.
It's hardback. It is also available as an ebook.
Oh.
But what we have is the $25 hardback version. It looks and feels like a cookbook, but one type of cookbook that you will have never seen before.
Never. It's so unique.
It's very unique. And as you know or may not know, the luchadors, Lucha Libre is the popular professional wrestling in
yeah.
Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all kinds of crazy costumes, and they have these very colorful, highly decorated masks. You probably know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They've got really dynamic, kind of crazy costumes, and they do lots of leaping and flipping and all that kind of stuff. And this is a cookbook that the author, Monica Ochoa, is actually the daughter of a Lucha Libre wrestler,
huh.
her mom.
Oh.
So she grew up in the business of it, and mm-hmm. she became one of the only female journalists to cover Lucha Libre wrestling.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's really comes from a personal side.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that her and her mom?
I'm guessing this page has her and her mom.
Oh, that's cute.
I'm thinking, yeah. And she's from Mexico City.
Ooh.
And so what she did was she gathered a bunch of recipes from famous or up-and-coming luchadores or luchadoras,
mm-hmm.
and other people in the business. So there's like a couple things from people that are like managers, people
oh, okay.
that are retired, people that have other roles in the business. And they share their famous, well, not their famous recipes, but like
they're like favorite
some of
recipes.
Their favorite recipes.
That's
and
cool.
it's divided up into, let me find the list here. In the, what we got here? We got appetizers, mains, desserts, and drinks and beverages.
Okay.
And it runs a whole gamut of different things. Some of the recipes are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that stuff. Some are like brand new things that I've never heard of before.
Nice.
And they all seem pretty easy. Honestly, there's so much. Like, it's one of those cookbooks where there's a lot to read, too.
That's what I like about this is the type of cookbook that I like, is that it has stories, like personal stories, photos of,
yeah.
of people, Yeah, I like that. It's, I don't like just a cookbook where it's just like, here's a recipe, like, and that's it. There's nothing, no story behind it.
Yeah, this like, one is full of stories. So you learn about each luchador. So it kind of like, it gives a background, like they're Super Astro. And it says he's from Tijuana, Baja California. He made his debut in May 1974. Now known for his incredible tortas. Today, cool. As he was well known as a luchador, Super Astro has entertained fans of Lucha Libre for many decades. So it's got like this old school one, and it's got like 2 pages of info about him. Like when he went to championships, his renowned matches, and then his recipe, the Gladiator Torta, makes a 6-pound sandwich. Yeah.
6 pounds.
6-pound sandwich.
Oh my God. Well, I imagine you can eat a lot if you are a luchador. I mean, you work out a lot.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, this one is one that I definitely want to try. 8 large eggs. One chicken, steak,
oh my
bacon,
God.
Bratwurst, chorizo.
That, I'm on a vegan diet and I can't eat this.
You got to be a luchador to handle the Gladiator Jr. Oh, there's a Gladiator Jr., which is a 3-pound sandwich.
Okay.
You could do that.
But is it vegan?
To answer your question, there are recipes that do not have meat.
Okay.
And the beverages range in anything from this luchador coffee drink.
Ooh.
Which is really cool. There's a, it's like a chocolate cinnamon.
Oh.
Like the Mexican hot chocolate. There's horchata.
Oh, I love horchata.
Which is really, really yummy. And there's a Michelada.
Oh, gosh.
A Michelada.
So good.
Which is an alcoholic beverage. There's a tequila sunrise. Mm. So there's just like lots of, a huge variety of dishes in here. And like I said, we haven't tried to make any of the dishes. I've just been sitting and reading.
Yeah, that's what I did. I read through and looked at stuff
about them.
I like the divorce style eggs because when we lived in South Philly, there was this amazing Mexican restaurant near our house and they had the best divorce style eggs.
And that's what I want to try because there's a recipe for divorce style
so
eggs.
So good.
I am a huge fan of.
Huge fan.
So, not only do you get really cool, unique recipes, some well-known Mexican food dishes, other ones like coming from people's families.
Yeah.
And maybe you feel like, oh, I already know how to make such and such. But what you get with this book is someone's, you know, their like family recipe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And their personal, connection
and,
to it or.
Yeah. So there's chicken. There's like basic stuff. Chicken fajitas with bell peppers. Fried fish, garlic, shrimp, stuff like that. Street taco, carne asada, street tacos. But you get it with their own kind of twist and a personal story about each one, which is like,
that's cool.
Really cool. And I like the photography. I think it's really cool. They have pictures of each of the luchadores
it
or luchadoras. And then I think a whole other aspect of this book is the illustrations. They are so good right off the front cover. And I had to look up the name here. It is Bene Rollman. B-E-N-E. Bene?
Bene.
Bene. Rollman. R-O-H-L-M-A-N-N. And if you are a person that loves cool artwork and looking at different illustrators, we'll put a picture up. Maybe post a couple pictures on our Twitter.
Yeah.
From some of these pages.
Like this book when they come over next.
I love the artwork and it's just really bright colors, cool patterns, and like really, I don't know how to describe it. It matches the colorful, bright patterned masks and outfits and costumes from luchadors that are famous for. And if you want to see
cool
more examples from the illustrator, I think it's just beneroman.com. So beneroHLMANN.com.
Nice.
And that person has really cool artwork.
That's
and
so
I
cool.
clicked on the store, but it wasn't open. Bene, come on. What's going
what's
on?
Up?
I want to buy some of your stuff.
Yeah, it's very cool.
First book of summer.
First book of summer. It made me think of, speaking of Mara and Carr, it made me think of, there is a restaurant in Philly that is called Distrito, and it's, is it a Stephen Starr restaurant? I think so.
I don't know. You know all those people.
I think it's a Stephen Starr restaurant in University City, and we went there with Mara and Carr, and it has, it's decorated like Lucha Libre. Like, it's a vibrant Mexican restaurant, very colorful. And then remember, up the staircase is just plastered with the Lucha Libre masks.
Mm-hmm.
And then upstairs, I've never seen this in a restaurant before. It's so cool, only in Philly. It has, like, swings inside the restaurant. Like, it's so cool.
Audible,
like,
guest.
So cool looking. Oh my God, you have to go. And I do remember that it was really expensive, or at least we just ate so much and drank so much that I wonder if Mara and Carl will remember that it was like, at that time, it was the most money I ever spent, like, at a restaurant. And I felt kind of embarrassed to spend that much.
Yeah, but it was a fun time.
It was so fun. But we'll have to ask him about it when we see him again. But if you're in Philly, go to this cool restaurant called Distrito that has Lucha Libre masks.
And if you're not in Philly,
swings.
If you're not in Philly, unfortunately, you can order this book on June 1st.
Yep.
It's called Eat Like a Luchador, the official cookbook by Legends of Lucha Libre and Monica Ochoa from Running Press. There are interviews and stories about well-known wrestlers in Lucha Libre, costume designers, restaurant owners, and their families, cool recipes like Super Astro's 6-pound gladiator torta. We're making that for breakfast tomorrow.
No, we're not.
Tanya Valkyrie's sweet and savory carne asada. I'm hopeful.
We're making purple yam waffles tomorrow. We're not making.
I'm hopeful that someone out there is like, I know all those people.
Wow.
Penta Zero M Zero Fear Chicken Fajitas. So, hope you check it
very
out.
Very cool.
And we will be back in un momento with the rest of our official 2021 essential books of summer. Break is over.
We're back.
You having a coughing fit over there?
No.
All right. So we talked about
I'm
our first book.
Fine.
Essential books of summer. Do you have essential books of summer you would like to share?
Yeah, I have two, but are you sharing any more?
I have one more.
Oh, well, I have two.
Why don't you go, and then I'll finish with mine.
All right, I'll do both of mine. I have to do them in 30 minutes. Okay.
You don't have to do them in 30 minutes.
But I will.
It's a challenge.
Okay, here we go. First book is called Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zahner. It's a memoir. So I don't know where I found this book. I have no idea where I found this book. But when I read the description, I was like, oh my God, there could not be a more perfect book for me.
They basically just wrote it for you.
She wrote, Michelle, thank you for writing this for me. So it's about this woman, Michelle Zahner. Well, I mean, it's her life. It's a memoir. So Michelle Zahner, she is a half Korean American. Her mom is Korean. Her dad's American. They live in Eugene, Oregon. We used to live in Eugene, Oregon.
Dun, dun, dun.
She moves to Philadelphia.
Did you write this book?
No, but she moved to Philadelphia, and then she ends up moving back home to Eugene, Oregon to live with her mom while her mom is dying from cancer to take care of her. They also take some trips to Korea, to Seoul. So it was just so interesting. It was really cool to like...
Wait, is this a memoir?
It's a memoir.
Okay.
Yeah. So she, Michelle Zahner is a musician. She is the lead singer of the indie rock music group called Japanese Breakfast. They have really interesting music, so you should check them out. she's a great author as well. It was just so interesting. Like a couple of things I loved about it. I loved that it was, you know, written in all these places that I know. So it was super, I always love whenever I have like a reference and she's talking about somewhere in Eugene and I'm like, oh my God, I know that I've been there, or like, you know, something in Philly and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that. Or like something about Korean food that I find really interesting because I love Korean food. We lived in Korea also, so I really appreciate the trips that she takes back there with her mom and then after her mom passes away. And it's a difficult book. There are some really difficult parts when her mom is dying from cancer, but I think it's important to be confronted with those kind of like emotions and like real pictures of death and what it's like for someone that you know and love to die and to witness it. And, you know, so I think we tend to shy away a lot from those kind of topics and like, ooh, I don't want to talk about that.
So is that where the title comes from?
Yeah. So Crying in H Mart, not to give too much away, but H Mart, funny you should ask.
Maybe unfamiliar with what H Mart is.
So funny you should ask. H Mart is a large Korean grocery store. I think they have H Marts in Korea, although I don't.
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, we went to a big H Mart in
Chang'e. I thought it was Lotte Mart.
Well, that's one Mart.
Okay, so apparently I don't remember that one, but you're probably right, I'm sure. You're always right.
Of course I am.
So they have H Marts in Korea, but they also have them in America. And so it's a place where, you know, Korean people, Korean expats, or maybe they're born in America, but they have Korean heritage, or people like us who lived in Korea and want to go get products that you pretty much can't find anywhere else except for in a Korean market, like really good banchan and kimchi, like the little side dishes that you get at Korean barbecue, all kinds of like Korean ramen, like a crazy amazing chip aisle. We actually did a podcast a while back where we sampled a big haul that we got at H Mart, like different chips and drinks and things.
I remember when we were in Korea, there wasn't an H Mart nearby.
Mm-mm.
But there was one in Changwon, I think, and mm-hmm. we had to go there to find any kind of beer that wasn't just Korean beer.
Yeah, like if you wanted H-Mart anything,
had the best beer selection.
They totally did, and not it wasn't even like that good, but it was like you could get European beers there. Like could you get American beers there? Maybe like Bud Light.
Maybe, but they had like. I mean, the Korean palate for beer is very light.
Super light.
So there was a lot of German beer there.
Yep, a lot of German, European beers. I remember that was the only place you could get, like, cheese, like, actual cheese. Mm-hmm. Like, I could get, like, a wheel of brie there or, like, a block of cheddar.
Yep.
Not a lot of cheese, but you could get, like, some cheese there, but... So yeah, she kind of goes to H Mart because, you know, one of the things is that she didn't, she and her mom didn't always have the best relationship. And so she, I think, goes through some periods of like regret that she didn't have a good relationship with her mom. And like, she didn't learn a lot about making Korean food and like her Korean culture. Like, she didn't take as much advantage of that as she wished she would have, and so she would go to H Mart and try to like reconnect a little bit with her Korean like roots, and it would make her cry because she would just, you know, find these things that would remind her of her mom or her childhood and you know, feel sad about it. So I thought it was interesting. I have felt like tears of joy in H Mart. So I can relate in a small sense of what she's talking to, because when you do go into H Mart, there's something like so like visceral about it, right? The smells are so, is visceral the right word?
Yeah.
Like pungent. the smells are like nothing you smell in any other grocery store, and like the sights are nothing you see in any other grocery store. So it's definitely like an experience for your senses. And so I could see how it can trigger like feelings of nostalgia for someone like me, or for her, you know, feelings of sadness, you know, longing for something that is no longer is there.
What are some of the Philly parts?
The Philly parts are not as much, because she's sort of just like back and like she moves there to go to college, and then she's there when her mom gets sick, and so she's not in Philly a lot during the book.
Anything I would remember from Eugene?
It's actually been a little while since I read this, honestly. So, she goes to different like music venues, like, name some. Ugh. I can't remember. McDonald Theater.
Hi-Fi Music Hall. That was there when we were there.
Yeah. So like stuff like that. And she goes to this one Korean place that we used to pass, but that we never went to, Cafe Seoul or something.
Oh, yeah.
We never went there, but her and her mom go there. They go to different like Korean restaurants. It sounds like her parents lived. In my mind, I think they lived. You remember when you're going up to, which one was the Big Butte? Was that Skinner or?
Spencer.
When you're going up to Spencer, remember, like, there's that big cemetery on the right?
Uh-huh.
And, like, nice. It sounds like they lived somewhere, like, right around there when she's describing it. So, like, in the hills. Is it North Hills or South Hills?
North Hills, I think.
So, and, like, she talks about the Butte.
No,
and,
South.
I don't know. Yeah, so, like, you'll have to read it. Like, I don't remember all the things, but you definitely... There are times when you're like, oh my God, I know that. I totally know what she's talking about.
Essential summer read.
Right. Exactly. And she talks about how hard it is to live in Eugene, which, like, I can also understand, not from the same standpoint as her, but, like, you know, after you live somewhere like Seoul or Philly, and then you live in Eugene, especially as a person of color, I imagine, like, it's a very small... you know, white place to live. And so I think it would be really hard to feel like at home there. And I think, you know, something that we kind of felt there, especially at the end, was that you just can't get these like cultural experiences there. Like it's just kind of lacking in restaurants and, you know, not to say anything bad about it, but it's just a small town. Like you just can't get those big city things that you want of like, a huge Korean grocery store or like Ethiopian food or Jamaican food, you know, like it's just, it doesn't have the diverse populations to warrant having those kinds of like shops and restaurants there. So that's a hard experience for her to be there.
Interesting.
And so she's kind of desperate to get out of there, also to kind of get away from her family and like make her own life. So it's really good. It's, you know, it has, like I said, it has some hard parts, but I think it's important to experience those kind of things and like, you know, read about that, like death and kind of face those kind of things, because, you know, we're all going to die and we're going to lose someone. So it's,
well, that's why a memoir should be on the essential summer reads list.
Yeah,
just because the memoirs are good for seeing how someone experiences tough things in their lives.
Yeah. All right, let me see.
What's next on your list? You've got plenty of time.
Next one on the list. I got plenty of time. Okay. So this I saw because recently I was... It's going to sound weird. I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I'm just going to say it anyway. Like, I think about Anthony Bourdain sometimes, which sounds weird. But, like, I really appreciated him as, like, a celebrity. I don't know what to call him. I mean, he was a celebrity. But
chef, writer, TV star.
He really inspired me, and I really just enjoyed watching his shows so much. I looked forward to them every week, and so, you know, every once in a while I'll just like look him up, just like, you know, on the internet, and just see what's out there. Mm-hmm. Just do a little deep dive. And so I just happened to see that there is a book that just came out, I believe. Let me look. When did this come out?
Talk amongst yourselves.
No, it's not here. Oh, what? My God. There's no
copyright.
What? Oh, here, maybe on this. I don't know. We don't have to take too much time. I think it just came out. But anyway, Anthony Bourdain and Lori Wolliver. So it's called World Travel and a Reverent Guide. And so basically, Lori Wolliver is a writer and editor. She was, she co-authored Anthony Bourdain's cookbook Appetites in 2016. And then before he died in 2018, they were working on this book together. If you are an Anthony Bourdain fan, and if you remember, his one show that wasn't so great, The Layover,
mm-hmm.
it was sort of like an in-between of, he did No Reservations for a long time. Then he did The Layover, and then he did Parts Unknown, which was his most recent shows before he died. So they were working on this book, but in Parts Unknown, in The Layover, he would go to different cities on a layover, and he would just kind of tell you, like, what should you do in Philadelphia if you only have 24 hours? And, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tell you, like, do like a quick city guide of like things to see. And he did go to Philadelphia on the layover, and it was very good. But he would always kind of bitch about travel guides, and just he would like have a fake one, and he would just have it wrapped so you couldn't see what it was. So it was probably like Lonely Planet or Fodder's or something. He would like open it up and be like, oh, what are you supposed to eat? And like kind of mock it because he thought that stuff was kind of like bullshit. So this was their attempt to write like a different kind of travel guidebook. And so what I really like about it, as someone who was a huge fan of Anthony Bourdain, watched every single episode of every single show, even the very old ones that he did with his brother, they're like super underground, like
wow.
way back before he even did like No Reservations. I think before he even did I don't remember what they're called. They had him on Netflix for a while before he wrote books. Oh. So before anything. But, you know, so this is broken down into all of Anthony Bourdain's favorite places, basically. So, and it's alphabetized. So it goes from, you know, like you got Argentina, Cambodia, Malaysia, South Korea. There's a bunch of places in the U.S. So basically it's broken down by place, and it's broken down similar to other travel books like arrival, accommodations, where to eat. That's pretty much it. It doesn't go into like things to do. But what I love about it is that it has different quotes from Anthony, you know? So like it takes quotes from all of his different shows. And so I think for Lori Wolliver, this was really kind of like a labor of love. I mean, she went through like transcribed his shows to find like memorable quotes of these different favorite places of his. And she talks about in the introduction, she went to his apartment and did like a couple hours interview that she taped with him in the startings of writing this book. And she was like, that was the last time I saw him, and I regret not sitting for hours, because he would sort of say something and then he would go, but we can get more into that later. And she was like, I wish I would have like pressed him on it because now I don't have any of it. So, very cool book. If you are, so I think the reason this is on a summer read is because a lot of people are thinking about traveling again, you know, including us. Like, I think international travel for me is still like a little iffy, up in the air. A lot of places are still really struggling. So I think it can be really in poor taste to travel internationally right now. You know, I think America, a lot of people are vaccinated and that's great, but a lot of other countries aren't vaccinated and are still really struggling. And so for me, I just don't think it's like a good choice right now to go to internationally, and I'm gonna wait until Christmas or next summer. But if you want to travel internationally, this is definitely a good book to take a look at some of these different places and get food and lodging recommendations and just kind of see, you know, Anthony Bourdain's thoughts about that place. But there are some places in America, so if you're wanting to do, if you live in America, you're wanting to do close to home travel, that's a good option.
It also seems like something that you would buy, you know, like what you were saying, is just like as an appreciator of everything that he put out there, and a follower and someone that buys pretty much everything that he worked on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a collector's manual. Like it's not something you're gonna put in your backpack and carry around with you as you walk through Bhutan.
No.
It's just like
a collection.
More so for sitting and reading and maybe making notes before you go somewhere.
Yeah, it's a large book, so it's like 500 pages. Large hardback book. So yeah, I wouldn't be like carrying this around in Cambodia and be like, oh, where am I going to stay in Cambodia? And I think that's kind of true for any travel guide. And that was kind of his like bitch about it, was like, are you really going to be kind of like one of those people that's like carrying around a travel book and just be standing on a corner of Cambodia and be like, where's this coffee shop at? Like, just like take some notes and like, just,
yeah. Yeah. It seems like it would be what he would want.
Yeah.
Is a book with some suggestions of favorite places, and you know, it's not the be all end all, but
no,
it's something,
it's a good starting point,
fun to read through. And I think we're all at a point now where we're starting to entertain the idea.
Yeah, that's, I'm starting to entertain the idea of, like, I think this summer we'll stay close to home, which is good, you know, go to some different beaches in America. We've talked about going to like New Orleans, New York City. So like just places here, like cities here. But yeah, I have my eye on international travel. We actually have to get our passports renewed before international travel. Where do you want to go?
Me?
Yeah. Like if you were like, the world's back open, everyone is vaccinated.
That's your favorite question.
It's my favorite question.
You ask me where I want to go probably once every couple of months. If you could go anywhere, where would you go?
For me, it changes. It kind of changes depending on, like, I'll get, like, obsessed with a place a little bit. Like, I've been on, like, an India obsession as of recent. I'm currently reading, which is another good summer read, I'm not finished yet, Padma Lakshmi's memoir. So I'm on a memoir kick too.
Mm.
But Padma Lakshmi's memoir, Love, Loss, and What We Ate, because I love Padma from Top Chef, and it's really great. I'm learning so much about her. She's a really fascinating person. She's had a fascinating, difficult life. But what I was going to say is, I've been sort of like on an India kick. So like, you know, she's talking so much about her like Indian roots and cooking, and, I've been watching some different like Indian like cooking videos. I ordered some Indian spices. I asked for a cookbook for my birthday.
I got you a motorcycle.
Hey, Scrappy. It's not anything to worry about.
I think I have been, because I've been trying to practice my Spanish more, I would like to go to Mexico.
Yep.
And do some exploring down there. And take my Spanish for a spin.
Yeah, we've talked about Mexico City for Christmas.
Yeah, so that would probably be the top of my list now.
That's been hot. Mexico City's been high on my list for a while, so I would be down for that. But yeah, it's good. This is Anthony Bourdain, World Travel, and Irreverent Guide is a good book to kind of whet your appetite thinking about
what
trying to think about traveling internationally again, and that is potentially an option within the next year for me. I don't know.
Yeah, gosh, see, I hope it happens soon. It's sad that there are other places in the world that are still struggling so much, and I hope that
there really are.
We could get to a place where we're able to help people out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy that there are so many people that are desperate to get a vaccine, and then here in the land where there's plenty of vaccines, there are people that won't take it. You know what I mean?
I'm not gonna, it's a microchip. Bill Gates is trying to chip me. I can't.
I like how your voice for a vegan is also the same as someone that will.
Okay. Yeah. No. Hold on. Let me channel this.
See if you could get a really.
Okay. Yeah. It's stereotype. Not that. All right. Yeah, sorry guys. I'm gonna go all like stereotype here.
We're gonna get canceled.
I'm not getting that goddamn vaccine. That Bill Gates microchipped it, and they ain't putting that in me. How was that?
That's pretty good.
Any other ones you want me to do?
Maybe here in a couple minutes.
Okay.
You work something up.
All right, I'll work something up.
See what you got going on. Yep. And next, I think I have a book.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and then we can do a book and more ramblings,
more accents,
more accents. We'll get some in there for you. Don't worry,
we'll be there.
Stay tuned.
Una momento. Well, where's the button? For the next essential summer read. I'm going to get this in before.
Back for the eighth take of this, since we've done this literally eight times, and Scruffy has had an explosive anger outrage each time that has completely ruined it. Does anyone want to have a dog?
We are giving away.
We're giving away a dog. So here's the contest. Just write in and tell us.
Anything.
Just say anything and you get a dog. You're welcome.
Best giveaway ever.
Yep. He's fully vaccinated, neutered. He just went to the vet. He's good to go.
Send us an email.
Yep.
Gaze into the, wait, no, what's our email? yourhoststeve@gmail.com. Literally write anything that you want and you get a dog.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there can only be one winner because there's only one dog. But
the first person to write an email, you get a dog.
Oh my god. Warning, don't try to do anything fun, creative, or nice because he wants to end it.
Don't touch him because he'll bite you.
And don't touch him because he'll bite you. Oh, he almost bit the air conditioning guy.
Did he try to touch him?
Yeah. We had someone come and check the air conditioning unit thing, and it doesn't seem like when you tell anyone like, oh, just ignore the dog, that also means don't touch him. Like, ignore the dog means act like the dog is not here.
Yeah.
Because
I guess you have to be very, like, so explicit. Like,
yeah.
Don't look at him. Don't touch him.
I turn around, I'm texting you. He went outside looking at the outside unit thing. Mm-hmm. He came in, Scrappy's barking, and he has a Kong in his mouth, like with treats I gave him. And he's just barking, growling, snarling, and the guy's bent over like trying to pet him. And I was like, dude, he doesn't like that. Please don't do that.
Like he's snarling.
He would have taken.
Why would you touch him?
He would have taken a chunk out of the guy's hand if he didn't have the toy in his mouth?
I don't know.
Good thing I intervened when I did.
Oof. Thank
anyway,
God.
We need to get this other fun. These other essential summer reads in before Scrappy decides to ruin it. So this is the next one on the Gaze in the Blue Light podcast, essential summer reads. Because we are at summer. Well, nearly.
This is the official weekend of summer.
This is the
The start of summer. This is the only weekend of summer.
Welcome,
so get it in.
To the Gaze in the Blue Light podcast official summer weekend. We declare it to be. This book, I feel very fortunate too that another amazing press publisher here in Philadelphia sent me a copy of this book from Lanternfish Press. They have really cool stuff.
Love them.
Yeah, they have really interesting books, kind of off the beaten path type of books. Mm-hmm. When you're looking for something different, not your general popular stuff, Lanternfish Press always has good stuff. They sent me this and by request because I really wanted to read this one. It's called The Salt Fields. It's a novella.
Novella.
You have to say it like that.
Novella.
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 And as you can probably tell, or you already know, a novella is a short novel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a short story.
Sexy novel. Novella.
I assume they could be sexy.
Okay. This one's
but
not.
Not all novellas are sexy. All
right.
Although I guess it depends on your definition of sexy. People define sexy in a lot of different ways.
Fair enough.
But this one is, so it's longer than a short story, but shorter than your traditional novel. This one weighs in at a hefty 127 pages.
Okay.
Nice quick read. Perfect for the summer.
Perfect for the beach.
So you don't want to carry something big, or if you're traveling via plane or a long road trip or something. It's light. It's small. Nice little paperback. And it's a really good book. So The Salt Fields, a novella by Stacy D. Flood. Huh. It came out March 9th, 2021. So it's still, there's still a little heat. Like if you hold it.
Hot off the press.
There's still remnants of press heat. See if you can get in.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Still
hand
a little
warmer.
Hot.
It's like a hand warmer.
Still a little hot off the press. At the excellent summer price of $14.
What?
For the book. There's also the ebook version if that is your jam.
That tickles your fancy.
If it tickles your fancy, which is a little bit.
Kind of gross.
That's a little gross. Tickling fancy.
Ugh.
Anyway, let's get to it. Stacy D. Flood is originally from Buffalo, currently living in Seattle.
New York. Buffalo.
I'm guessing. Ooh. I don't know that there are other
Buffaloes.
I like
Buffalo, New York.
There are probably,
shout out.
Yeah. There are other Buffaloes, surely, but none is quite as notable as Buffalo, New York.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're going to say just Buffalo, then it's like to be assumed.
That's one of the cities where you don't have to say the state.
Okay.
Los Angeles.
While you continue, I'm going to look up and see where the other Buffaloes are located.
New York City. Philadelphia. Portland, Buffalo, like Madonna, you know, Prince.
Yeah.
Ronaldo. If you only need one name, you're notable. Anyway, I'm talking about Stacy D. Flood. He has got his MFA in creative writing from San Francisco State University.
Nice.
So no slouch. And I have to say, there was a lot packed into this short read. Because of the size, I kept it in my work bag.
Oh, nice.
Nice little, tiny little paperback to carry to and from work on the commute. And I ride the subway, so it was nice and short and small. And so I kind of read it
as
I commuted to and from work. Yeah. And so it basically, this book, The Salt Fields, basically covers the travels of a black man in South Carolina. And this is, I believe, I don't know the date, but it takes place during the Jim Crow era, perhaps, I want to say. And some things happen, and he ends up selling his house and just leaving town and jumping on a train. And, well, not jumping on, I mean, he buys a ticket.
Right? Not like old-timey, like, jumping on in the night. Like a...
No, but, so it's equal parts, I don't know how to describe it. Something that we need to, I feel like we need more stories about, which is stories about the African-American experience in the South.
Yeah.
Written from that perspective.
Yeah.
Not from a, like, white people rescuing black people, but from the perspective of the African-American experience. And the cool thing about this book is that it's all set based on this main character's train travel.
Oh, it starts off in South Carolina. I love train travel books.
Yeah. So it's got a cool plot that moves it along, which is his travel on the train and the people that he meets on the train.
Oh my God, I love those kind of stories.
Yeah. And so the people that he meets on the train are other African Americans because they have to sit together in the same car. We're in this era right now.
Are they using, do they say African American in the book?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Because I know, like,
I mean, I'm using
a lot of times now we're saying BIPOC.
True. Well, like in reference to this book, I'm not trying to be social police.
Social police.
I don't mean to be the social police, but my siren's going off. I'm using the term African American because of when this book was set.
Okay,
these
people
are, as far as I can tell, maybe one generation out from slaves.
Okay, that's what I assumed. I just wanted to, you know, for the sake of not getting canceled, like, just bring it up.
That's why I'm using the term, but you know, whatever works for the setting. I think it applies here.
I love the idea of a train travel book, though. That is always so good to me.
Yeah, and it's cool because it drives along the narrative of starting in South Carolina, where things can be and were very dangerous.
Yes.
For black people traveling along that route, and there were segregated train cars and dangers if you got off of the train, and shocked faces when you walked in certain parts of town. And there was a large number of black people leaving the South and coming up North looking for
a new start
and a new attitude towards them, and perhaps bigger and better opportunities to make a get in the South.
Yeah.
So, like, he meets just interesting people. There's there's kind of like a little train romance that happens.
Okay.
And he talks with a soldier, which is a really interesting kind of point of view of, like, black soldier coming back from the war.
What war?
I would say Vietnam. World War II. And, you know, being celebrated and even having the Europeans over there, like, respect them as soldiers, and then coming back here and still be nothing again, which was the experience that a lot of people went through. So it feels real.
And relevant.
And definitely relevant.
Unfortunately.
In a really, like, good, engaging story. And it just kind of follows this one character as he travels through the different regions. And they get time, you know, at some of the bigger stops, you know, they'll get a few hours. And
they can get out. Explore necessarily, but.
Yeah, and the one, he gets invited to go to, like, a family meal.
Oh.
With someone that's on the train. And so it's kind of like he absorbs his kind of like little cultural experiences along the way. And I really loved that perspective.
That's cool.
I thought it was good. And it was small. It had travel in it. It was relevant to what we're talking about a lot now with race. And I feel like it was a story that should have been told. That kind of experience should be talked about more.
Yeah.
And it was beautifully written. I mean, there were some sentences that I reread over and over, mm-hmm. A few times, just because they're lyrical. They sounded really nice. And the characters are well thought out. And, for a novella, I thought it was deep. Like, it doesn't have the length to get really, really deep mm-hmm. into a story. But for this one, it really worked.
Well, I think we talked about that a little bit with the other novella that you had. That I just finished, the one about the Asian American experience Caitlin with Chung. The gold rush, the ship of fates, which is a similar size, which was very good. And I think you mentioned this whenever you reviewed that one as well, of like, I think it's more difficult to write a really good story that has so much depth and emotion and so many characters in such a short amount of pages. I think that's a really a difficult task and shows a lot of skill to be able to do that so succinctly and
discipline.
Yeah.
You're getting it's sort of like poetry, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting just the essentials. There's not any long, drawn out descriptions of various things just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
It's pared down and it's a solid read. Good for travel, I would
say.
Well,
I'm going to take that and read it this next coming week on my beach trip.
There you go. Down the shore trip. Yeah.
My down the shore.
And it's it overall, I would say it has a very it has a good vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Bad things happen, but you feel for this main character as he mm-hmm. makes this big train transition, this big life move. It still holds on to some hope and some positivity, despite some of the crazy stuff he sees and does.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out. Sounds really good.
Yeah, another essential summer read, The Salt Fields, a novella by Stacy D. Flood. We'll put information in how to buy it because it's for sale now, March 9th. It came out.
Oh, March 9th.
So I'll put a link in the show's description on how you can get yourself a copy.
Amazing. That sounds good.
Should I do one more essential book?
Nah.
No?
I think we're good.
We're good.
For now. Let's talk about what you're, speaking of summer reads, you're going to be off for the summer. What are you looking forward to doing?
What am I looking forward to doing? Well, I want to practice my Spanish much more.
Mm-hmm. You started taking Spanish lessons?
Started with my Spanish tutor, Hugo.
Spanish tutoring.
I call him my tutor.
Hello, Hugo. Tutor.
El maestro.
Mm-hmm.
Professor.
Yeah, I'm really proud of you for doing that.
Yeah, that's good. I needed to mm-hmm. pay some money and be accountable.
Yeah,
and
for
I
sure.
don't want
to
look.
Sometimes you have to do that.
I can't look Senor Hugo in the face
mm-hmm.
and be like, I didn't practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he keeps me.
Yeah.
Well, we've only met twice, but still, I know that our lesson is coming up and that I need to practice. And he sends me, things to practice and vocabulary to practice.
That's so good.
So that's good. I really would like to do that because this week I did a meeting with a Spanish speaking parent, their student that mostly speaks Spanish, and an interpreter. And it was just the whole time I was just thinking this would just be so much easier if I could speak Spanish.
Yeah.
It would be so much more effective. Mm-hmm. How much just gets lost because when you're using an interpreter, they're wonderful, but you can't sit there and talk for 5 minutes and then let them talk. Like,
yeah,
so many things are going to be missed, and they're, you know what I mean? You're going to frustrate that person. And so I didn't talk for more than a few sentences before letting the interpreter.
Yeah.
Then there's a question, you know, it's just,
yeah,
it's got like the job done, but
fragmented.
And even like scheduling meetings and things, it would just be so much
easier,
more effective and easy if I could just speak Spanish. So,
and you just feel more connected to the families, I think, if you,
and there are a lot of families too that they speak Spanish and they just miss out on all this stuff. And I mean, others may disagree, but I feel like they have every right, just as much as any other student and family, to have a positive school experience. Yeah. And so I'm highly motivated. That's going to be a big thing for me this summer.
I think that's going to be great.
I thought about reviewing Pobre Ana on this show. It's the first book in Spanish that I read.
Really?
Yeah. It's like the Spanish teacher gave it to me. It's like a very basic kid's book.
And you read it?
Yeah. It's just, it's like Spanish one, like,
oh my God, level. Still though.
But I thought about reviewing it.
I'm so impressed.
I don't know. If you are like a beginner Spanish speaker, and maybe you have a handful of vocabulary and you feel like you know a little bit, Pobre Ana is actually like a book that you can read. I mean, it's very, very small.
What about that kids, podcast, but... like Slow Spanish? Isn't it like, have you heard of this?
Huh.
Let me look it up real quick. Oh my God. I also wanted to tell you. Okay. Sorry. We're jumping around a bit, but go. Okay. How many cities in the U.S. do you think?
Oh.
When I opened my phone, I saw this on here. How many cities in the U.S. do you think are also named Buffalo?
10.
Close. 11. So I guess you're right if it was 10 other than Buffalo.
I was right.
So, of course, there's New York, Buffalo.
Victory.
South Carolina, West Virginia, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, Minnesota, Texas, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Wyoming.
Do you think those people say, I'm from Buffalo?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not that one.
All right, slow Spanish.
I can't believe I got that right.
That was amazing.
I guess it was a pretty good guess. I mean, there are only 49 other states.
Oh, it's called News in Slow Spanish. News in Slow Spanish is a podcast that I have heard things about.
Oh, I'll try it.
And so basically it's, I think, listening to news in slow Spanish.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's my thank you. I will look at that because I need more listening practice. Yeah. I want to get like reading and and talking to a tutor every week is a good way for me to practice my conversation.
But... yeah, that would be good.
And I know people that speak Spanish, so
if we hang out with them, you can
badger them.
Try to just speak with them in Spanish a little bit.
Yeah, you know what's weird?
When we have them over.
It's like I'm more scared to talk to my friends in Spanish than I am to my tutor Hugo.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, I get what you're saying.
That's my summer plan. Speaking of summer plans.
It's your only summer plan?
Well, no, I have other summer plans.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, we are probably going to take a summer break.
We are going to take a summer break.
From podcasting.
Yeah.
We might jump on and do one here and there.
Yeah, maybe once in a while, but we're busy.
We do have
a lot of plans. We have we're pretty much June is like just gone with like 2 weeks at different beaches. That's like completely gone.
Family time.
Family time.
Someone will die.
Someone will die. And then we might take some other trips. We have season tickets to the Philadelphia Union, so we're going to be going to lots of soccer matches.
Ole!
Ole! Yeah, we have a garden. We joined a community garden, so it's like a few blocks from our house. There's a garden, and we have a little plot there, and so every one Saturday a month, we go over for community garden days, and we have our own plot that we're growing stuff in. And then there's like a bunch of shared community plots that we help take care of during the gardening days. And then once their vegetables are ready, we invite people from the community in who need fresh vegetables and give them to them. So that's been super cool.
I need to go over there and put those two cucumbers.
We need to go over there, but it's looking good. Like, I'm super impressed with us. This is our first time doing something like that, and like, it's looking good.
You know, my mom said that we can eat that kale
already.
Yeah.
Then do you, like, will it keep growing if you harvest it in a certain way?
Yeah, you have to take it off the right way, but then it will keep growing, I think.
Yeah, we should probably check that out. Next weekend's a garden weekend. Next Saturday.
Okay, then.
Yep.
We'll go and ask a professional.
But yeah, so busy. It's going to be a busy summer.
Yeah, so we'll probably take a podcast break, although we'll probably pop in for a I don't know. Maybe it'll just be me.
It may be, yeah. Yeah, you never know. Well, I mean, I'm at home working, so maybe I won't be that busy. I have half day Fridays. We could do a podcast sometimes. Yeah, we might jump on in the summer.
Half day Friday podcast, yeah. I have a big stack of books to get through.
But yeah.
So I may do.
Hope everyone has a great summer. Stay safe, but definitely, you know, if you're vaxxed like us, get out there and try to enjoy some stuff locally and enjoy some restaurants and bars and beaches and all that good stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're not vaxxed, stay at home. I'm kidding.
At least you should be waxed. At least get waxed.
Vaxxed and waxed, baby.
All right, we're out. Adios. Peace. Enjoy out. The essential reads of summer.